This is Speaking of Faith, First Person. This online exclusive is part of Repossessing Virtue, an ongoing series in which we search for fresh ways to think and talk about the current economic crisis. I'm Nancy Rosenbaum, production assistant at Speaking of Faith. Here, I speak with Khalid Kamau, a listener who was recently laid off from his job as a financial analyst for a nonprofit organization in New York City. He begins our conversation by reading an essay he wrote in response to our call out for listener stories about the moral and spiritual dimensions of the economic downturn.
Well, my name is Khalid Kamau. I am from Atlanta originally, but I am currently living in New York. Once when I was young, I came home after school and baked a cake for my mom for dinner. I wanted to surprise her. She's a nurse and had been at work all day, you know, before starting her second shift as our mom. So I pulled down a box of cake mix, and after I emptied the cake mix in the bowl, I saw that the recipe called for eggs, and we were out. I remembered the stories my family would tell about growing up in the rural, segregated South. Though Jim Crow blacks suffered severe institutional oppression, their communities were strong, and neighbors were always helping one another out. People would come over and ask for a cup of sugar or a loaf of bread, and if you had it, you gave it, my mom would say. So that day, I went across the street to Miss Jessie, our retired neighbor, who kept an eye on my brother and I in the afternoons until my mom or dad got home. I knew she would have some eggs, and maybe even fondly recall the same traditions of sharing my parents spoke of. Well, Miss Jessie did have eggs, and stories of her own about communities sharing their resources in the Great Depression and the segregated South. I got my two eggs and finished baking the cake. When my mother arrived, I presented her with the cake and proudly recounted all my efforts and resourcefulness. But the glow from her face quickly faded when I got to the part about borrowing the eggs. She called my father into the kitchen, and together they scolded me about going around the neighborhood begging for food. But I thought that's what you guys did in the olden days, I asked. That was a long time ago, my mother said. Things are different now. It appears that in today's culture, strong communities are those where estranged neighbors live on islands of manicured McMansions and gated exurbs with no need for one another, where sharing is not a practice of healthy community building, but an act of last resort for the desperate and destitute. I have only once since borrowed pantry supplies from a neighbor, and they were also my best friends. That happened several years later. In October 2008, when the market began to collapse, I secretly hoped the crash would be so complete that our middle class pretenses would fall with our capitalist system. Instead, what I see is a president, a Congress, and a marketplace eager to maintain the status quo. But they're just taking their marching orders from us, the American people. We are as desperate as ever to keep up appearances, renegotiating unfair loans to keep our McMansions, curbing our hours and our benefits to keep corporate jobs, postponing our nation's bankruptcy with one stimulus package after another. It seems we're still willing to do anything to keep from knocking on our neighbor's door to ask for eggs.
So one thing that I was really taken with as I read your essay is you speak to the challenges of being in and building community. We've heard from a lot of listeners that this is really a time to reevaluate the notion that we can go it alone, that more than ever we're recognizing interdependencies and that we need to reignite ties with family and community. But in your piece, you talk about why that can be hard to do.
Yeah, I think it doesn't really work unless everyone's doing it. You know, if only one or two people are doing it, it's easy to sort of label them as needy, you know, which is just such a negative label in our society. And I think when you think about the Great Depression or even, you know, segregation in the South, the oppression was so overwhelming that everyone needed one another, and there just wasn't the situation was so dire that no one could pretend that they didn't need someone else. And I guess we're not. This crisis is so, it's still happening on such a individual case by case level that maybe out with the exception of Michigan, I don't think that it's really hit in a widespread enough way to force people out of, you know, these bad habits that we've kind of made for ourselves.
I'm wondering, you said you live in New York now.
Yes.
And what you're doing to connect with community there.
Well, I've actually gotten really involved in my church. It kind of started a little bit before the crash, but I actually lost my job in January, so now I've become really involved, and I volunteer at the food pantry and just go to service all the time. And there's a really, I think, well, churches in general, but my experiences in the Black church, there is a more instant kind of community because you have a shared. We know that, like, no matter how diverse our backgrounds are, we have this one really big shared belief. And I think that sort of ties us together in a way that, you know, you don't see a lot. We don't have a lot of civic associations anymore, a lot of Mason's Halls or bowling leagues or, you know, those sorts of things that I guess, you know, people used to have long ago.
How are people being impacted by this economic crisis? What are you seeing in your community?
Well, I live in Harlem, and Harlem is, of course, in Manhattan. A lot of my friends are in finance, and a lot of them have been laid off. Most of us are young and single, you know, so we're not, our situations individually are not as desperate as things that I've seen go on around me. But New York has a really good system of social services. You know, they charge lots of taxes, and a lot of that money goes to social support programs and welfare. And so everyone who needs that sort of social safety net has access to it in New York, and everyone who doesn't need it hasn't quite gotten that desperate. So it doesn't seem visually, things don't seem very different. And because I think New York's real estate market is so robust or so competitive, there's not a lot of, you know, foreclosed signs or, you know, just visually things kind of still look the same. And it's not really until you maybe talk, you get into conversations with people that people will begin to, like, share their fears or concerns.
One thing that we've been asking people is where they're turning to for spiritual guidance or inspiration during this time. And I'm wondering what sources of guidance and inspiration are helping you right now.
For me personally, like, I really I pray a lot. And one of the, you know, I've gone back to the Bible. It's, you know, it sounds cliche, but, you know, I've gone back to reading the Bible a lot. And one of the things that you realize in a lot of these biblical stories is the way that God would use a misfortune as an opportunity. And I think that I just look for the opportunity in the things that have happened. So for me, and losing my job, I lost it in just enough time that I could still apply to go to school in the fall. And now I have all the time that I need, you know, to work on applications and essays and things. So I think that that's where my spirituality is leading me, is to just to see the opportunities and what's happening.
You mentioned that you lost your job and that you've started to get more involved in your church and volunteer. I'm wondering if there are other things that you've been doing differently.
I don't spend the way that I used to. My roommates and I, we we had a cleaning service that came in. I would drop my clothes off, and I would drop my clothes off at a wash and fold, and someone would wash and fold them for me, and I'd pick them up. And I obviously don't have money to do those things, but I also have a lot more time, and I think it sort of made me reevaluate time, you know. And we, in this other life that I had, I was a financial analyst. I was just always busy, you know. I was too busy to do everything. So, though I don't have as many material things, I feel like I have more time, and so I actually feel wealthier in a way. There's a way that when you're working, you know, one of the things that we hear often in the workplace is that, you know, you have to leave your personal problems at home, but very often you bring the stress from your job home, and, you know, your job isn't really too concerned with what you're taking home as long as you don't bring anything back. And so I think now, like, I really do just feel like a weight has been lifted. I have so much more free time, and my mind is, I'm just less weighed down by all of these worries that I had at work, which were really all about, like, paperwork and office politics and things that really, in the long run, don't even matter.
I'm wondering, you mentioned this resource of time and how you're using that time, this expanse of time, differently.
Sometimes I don't do anything. You know, sometimes I lay in bed and watch television all day, or I lay in bed and don't do anything, you know, for an entire morning. I think there's this urge, you know, I really think it's this capitalist urge. It's this urge of consumption to wherever there is an empty space, that it needs to be filled with something. And we usually have to, like, spend money to fill it. And the same thing happens with time. I think the first week I was off, I was feeling really guilty and unproductive because, like, I had all of these extra hours that weren't filled up with things. But I kind of decided that instead of filling them up with things that aren't important, that, like, maybe I won't do anything. I don't think necessarily that. I mean, this is the sort of thing that will sound completely irresponsible and completely lazy in a capitalist context. But I think, you know, in some other society, I don't think that there's really a need to fill time up just to fill it up.
Okay, so one of the things that you mentioned before is now that you have this time to volunteer, and you were speaking also about the social safety net that exists in a city like New York. I'm wondering if you're seeing more people participating in that, even some of your peers.
You know, I have to say that I think that I'm pretty unique amongst my friends. I don't see them doing those sorts of things. And I think there's something about the character of New York City itself. You know, like, New York is like the only one of the 13 colonies that was founded not for religious freedom or something, but it was founded specifically for people to make money. It was a for-profit enterprise. And I think that to this day, hundreds of years later, New York tends to draw those kinds of personalities. I was a financial analyst for a nonprofit, but most of my friends were financial analysts for, you know, the mortgage banks or just other corporate institutions. And they've gotten right back into the job market search. They're either pursuing, you know, business degrees, MBAs, or they are looking for another job just like the one they had. And that's some of what I talked about in my essay, is that I think that there are people who are knocked flat by this financial crisis, and it makes them stop and think about what is really important. As Dr. Rimmon says, like, what will sustain them, you know? But But there are other people who don't want to stop and think at all. They just want to hurry up and replace this thing that they've lost with something just like it, so that they can continue their life as it is. I mean, because it's, for a lot of people, it's a pretty good life.
In your essay, you talk about the shame around asking for help. And, or you know, you went to a neighbor and your mother was upset because it would show to other people that we're needy. And mm-hmm. and you note, too, that as an adult, you've only once ever asked somebody, a neighbor, and it was a friend, to borrow some eggs or some milk. So I'm wondering how you're wrestling with this now, having put it on the page, if that's something that you want to work on or change, or it just is in your life. Because clearly you're volunteering and you've worked in the nonprofit sector and you're thinking about how you can be of service to others. But that act of asking for help can be really difficult. So I'm wondering where you're at with that.
It can. And you know, one of the first things that happened when I lost my job is that I experienced this shame. You know, even though it happened really through no fault of my own, I was afraid to tell people. It was really a lot like contracting a disease, you know, that has some sort of stigma around it. But one of the things that I've done is that now I tell everyone. You know, I think probably by the end of that day, if not by like the next morning, like I got up and I called everyone that I knew, and you know, I told them that I didn't have a job, and I would, you know, I went to church and I would tell people. I mean, I wouldn't necessarily make an announcement, but it would just come up. I would make sure that it came up, because I think there is a sort of way that people will just assume that you still have a job, and you can let people assume that. So that's sort of been my first step in asking for help, is to just let people know that I might need it sometime soon in the future because I don't have a job. But it is still, I think it is still hard to bring that up. I live with roommates, and sometimes we will buy things together, or we'll go in for purchases together, and I haven't been able to necessarily do that all of the time. And there still is some shame around that. But I don't know. I guess I work through it every day.
You've been listening to Khalid Kamau, a listener who was recently laid off from his job as a financial analyst for a nonprofit organization in New York City. This is Repossessing Virtue, speaking of faith's continuing exploration of the economic crisis. For more, subscribe to the SOF podcast and visit speakingoffaith.org.